Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the week again. The Rugby League rant, fifth and last. Put on your headgear, chuck in your mouthguard, and get ready for an hour of nothing of the NRL tour. Here we are, Boxhead, and the grand final has been decided. It's the Battle of the West for the fourth time this season. It's not very often that we have a team that plays twice during the regular season, week one of the finals, and then meets again in the big dance.
2 years in a row.
Yeah, it was South last year. Yeah. I was trying to think back to another occasion. I wondered, I didn't look at the draw today because obviously it's going a bit back, but somebody at work I said it to if it had been multiple times. Cowboys Tigers played week one in the old system.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know if they played twice during that season.
Manly Roosters as
they
well.
They got back to one another. Roosters Manly, yeah, I'm pretty sure that would have been another one. So, big effort, obviously, for Parramatta to find their way back. Obviously, hasn't been a smooth ride. It's been plenty of drama and plenty of noise along the way, but for Brad Arthur and his troops, it's a great result.
That's unfortunately not alcohol.
Nah, it's a Coke Zero, not even sugar. No, Dallas, get a bit of that in here. But outstanding by Parramatta to find their way back in, basically like we've said all year, is realistically, the last chance before a bit of a turnover and a bit of a change at their club. And, congratulations to Brad Arthur and the Eels. For the Penrith side, well, again, just as much congratulations has to go to them. Start the year without your halfback, miss him for the last five games, more Origin players, more representative round players than anybody, have had an absolutely golden...
He missed actually half their games.
Didn't he? He missed 10 games.
Yeah, but he would have missed some with Origin, no?
I think when I looked, if you take out the finals, I think he played 13 or 14 of the season.
I reckon he would have played 13
So he basically missed...
He missed 11 games.
Basically missed half the year. But crazier enough again. And no, we know part of it is luck in terms of injuries. For a team that had so many representatives and had to use 32 players, I can't think of a side that's had a better run with injuries, which is awesome. Yeah. May's the only one coming into this week under a cloud. I'm sure there's guys with other niggles, etc., but they won games early. They banked points. They managed the Origin period. They won with their reserve grade team. They rested all those guys at the end. Like they were far and away the dominant minor premiers. They were a little sluggish week one. Banged it out in the second half. They started a little slow the other night.
16 games this year, so 14 and 2 in the finals.
There you go. So you missed 10 games, which is crazy to think that, probably your
best... Yeah, but missed none during the Origin period.
Your best player sits 10 games out and you still win 20 or 21 during the regular season. Outstanding effort by the club, and probably to that point as we talk about the grand final, obviously a huge weekend for Penrith in general. They obviously won the under-18s or under-19s now as it is SG Ball early in the year. They won Jersey Flag, the 21s, a golden point comeback. They were 12 down, and then they won New South Wales Cup. They made it a little bit probably harder than what they should have. They had a few chances to sort of blow it out and take control. Full credit to the Bulldogs, who had a great run through the final series and gave them all they could, but they've essentially won every grade except Harold Matthews this year and have the potential to win the NRL this year.
Yeah.
So they could close out four grades within 2 weeks, which would be outstanding.
Yeah, not really surprised.
Nah. But again, points to this situation. If you're a Penrith fan, it doesn't mean that guys coming in and succeed as quickly as some of the guys they've had, but it's very nice to know that you've got guys pushing through at all levels. That's telling you that there's people coming up the rear in all positions regardless.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Sometimes you can, like you said, have an unfortunate...
I think there's a lot to be taken out of it, actually, for not just Penrith, but for those two results that you mentioned. For Newcastle, that's huge.
Yeah.
To compete so well with Penrith at the 21s level tells you that there is, or there are some players that are going to push through and hopefully progress into New South Wales Cup and into first grade. And for the Bulldogs, it shows you that there are... You do have depth there, and there also is some hope that's going to obviously... fill in underneath the players that they're going to have to recruit.
We're still waiting for a few announcements, but I know Gus said we're going to have to fill the gaps in a little bit with our development. I know for a fact they took two very good kids off the Roosters in the last few weeks. Zach Montgomery, who we saw from the Central Coast, moved up to play in their 21 system. He's a front rower, back rower. He's heading to the Bulldogs next year. And their captain of their 18s team, I think, this year, or he's maybe started in 18s or he started in flag. He played cup for the Bears, Jacob Preston. So they've got two guys that are edge players or can play middle, depending on how they develop coming over. And I'm still waiting for confirmation. They talked about him. He won the 21s competition on the weekend with the Townsville Blackhawks. He's in the system of the Cowboys, but is backlogged. Thomas Duffy, a halfback, who played very well on the weekend. So they're obviously trying to fill some needs in there through a gap in their development to obviously get some guys coming in. And then Khaled Rajad, who played on the weekend, is only a fleet kid in the New South Wales Cup in the halves. So obviously try to plug that up while they fix the pathway over there. So good signs. Like you said, Newcastle, I know, probably going back and going a bit off topic, but to be in the grand final for the 21s, a few of those kids played in their SG ball who also finished in the top four and got knocked out in the prelim, shows luckily for them they do have some guys coming through. They just need to get them through to the NRL.
Mm.
So, but yeah, huge for Parramatta to get back into a grand final. Their fans obviously waiting, as I've said it to you, the joke I told blokes at work that I call the Eels you, Brock, because they haven't won a comp for as long as you've been alive, because you were born, you're the Eels. So huge opportunity for them.
Yeah.
And their NRLW team, crazy enough, won one game and got in with a negative four and against. They're now in the grand final.
They sure are, yeah.
The Roosters undefeated, got rolled. So, fair bit of madness on the weekend. But
fair bit going on.
Running through some of those other results before we break down the two NRL games. Queensland Cup, North Devils, who were obviously coached by Rowan Smith before he went over and took control of Leeds. They went back-to-back. Huge effort by them. 16-10 over the Dolphins. They'd be a little bit disappointed, I guess, but heading into the NRL next year, they not only featured in the Queensland Cup Grand Final, but they featured in the 21s Grand Final. They were unable to win either of them, but it at least shows that they've got some kids in their own system pushing through, which is going to be desperately needed in the first few years for the Dolphins.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Devils, huge effort by them. Lost a lot of guys this year, but you know, some good efforts from Jack Ahern and a few of the guys that were there before. They got Gamble and Roberts to come back down from Brisbane to help out the back end there, which certainly helped. But Lever Harpulu obviously played some NRL. Michael Seo, Kieran Mosley, Tony Tamusa, a lot of guys that have featured 20s Cup and NRL squads. Very late on, McGrady, who played at Penrith, scored the match winner, dislocated his elbow, so I don't think he's going to be available for the State Cup final. But probably, again, credit to the guys that took over after Rowan Smith, but the position he left that club in before he headed to Leeds, who also featured in a grand final over the weekend, but unfortunately didn't get the result.
No. No, they didn't. But, yeah, gave a good account of themselves. St. Helens were the favourites all year, so no surprise in the result. Leeds would be disappointed with the way they played, and fair enough as well. But, to come from where they came from, they were down 8 points with 10 to go in a game in the last round against Castleford. They had to win that to get in. So to win that and then to win two away games, particularly to beat Wigan at Wigan in a prelim, was massive. And to get beat by 12, there's no shame in that. I think from where they were and where they've got to, an incredible coaching performance.
Yeah, like I said, his fingerprints all over what he left at North there and the players that he had for a period of time. It's a great job and a good reflection and great result for him. Saints, huge credit for them, four in a row. Started with Holbrook, carried on by Christian Wolf, who's obviously heading back to the Dolphins. Three competitions in a row for him.
Yeah,
crazy.
Huge.
They've rolled guys in and out. People have moved on, come back home. But they've obviously got Johnny Lomax. He's a fairly handy player. I think he got man of the match. Wellesby is the young player. I think he scored the match winner the other year, didn't he, during COVID? Jack Wellesby?
I don't know.
I thought that was him. Maybe I was wrong. He was outstanding, obviously, again this year. But overall, huge result for them. So Super League done. Queensland Cup done. Like I said, the 21s. Their version flag up there. The Blackhawks won 46-32. So, you know, good for the Dolphins. Now they've got guys pushing through, but awesome for the Cowboys, who had a huge year this year, blooded a lot of kids. They had 11 contracted players in that team. So they got another good group coming through, which is obviously great for them. 46-32. Defence wasn't exactly outstanding, but both the centres, both the halves, fullback, couple of forwards, the wingers, they had a lot of guys there. Duffy, the seven, as I talked about, I think he's moving on, but Burke, the six. Labert and Lip, the centres. Tom Chester, who got upgraded first grade this year, plays halves, fullback. They've got a lot of good kids, so positives to them. Cup, like we said, Penrith won against the Dogs. No surprise there. That team was pretty stacked, but the Dogs certainly didn't go away. Brian Wakeham and Jackson Tapine certainly had a big hand in things for them, but Penrith, Sony Luke, Taruva, a lot of those guys, Hopgood, that played first grade, very dominant in their flag team, like we talked about as well. Extra time. Tell you what, I was impressed by some of their SG ball kids. Obviously, SG hasn't been really shown as much. Well, there's not as much video available, but there was five or six guys that pushed up and finished the year in flag there. So to win both competitions is pretty outstanding. Mm. But the fullback in the end, he was like the Dylan Edwards clone, Liam Eisen. Yeah. I watched the video.
I didn't see the game.
I only saw the back end, but some of the runs and the energy he had at the back end when everyone was cooked in extra time, it was literally like watching Edwards. He was just still motoring. And obviously, Katoa, who's moving to the Dolphins to play first grade, he iced the result.
Well, there's no surprise that they were struggling to make the finals, and then Katoa comes in and they win the comp. That shows you how good of a player Katoa is.
Mm. He's going to be
a good pickup for the Dolphins, provided that he can progress into first grade again. A lot of people just think, well, he's a superstar, he's killing 20s and 18s, but it's a different story playing in NRL footy. So
yeah,
we'll see how he goes.
It's going to be different developing in that pathway.
Particularly under, in a side which doesn't look like they're going to set the world on fire in the next couple of years.
No, and you'd think their cup side wouldn't be as strong because they've had to upgrade three or four of those guys to fill sort of their 30, and they've still got to fill about six or seven spots.
They're not short on cash. So.
It's definitely going to take away. But yeah, Liam Eisen, Sam Lane, John Segaga, Riley Smith, a lot of these guys pushed up. And then the Puru twins, who both played a lot of cup this year, Ho Hepa, the lock, he got man of the match. But they all had a big save. But for Newcastle, again, the back row, Thomas Cant, the captain, Oren Keeley, who didn't play, who we saw earlier in the year, get his debut. Two really good back rows are coming through for them. Sharp, the fullback, looked like a Pappenhausen clone with that filthy mullet. And Max Bradbury played New South Wales 19s, a front row. So hopefully, fingers crossed for Newcastle, some of those guys do push through. So it looks like there's some good talent there for them. And then NRLW to finish off, as we said, obviously, the Roosters was a big upset. Parramatta snuck in with one win and negative four and against, rolled them quite comfortably. The Roosters, I couldn't believe it. Important game, but errors and bombed opportunities, and Parramatta just come home over the top. Obviously, that they're half pressed and had an absolute blinder. Gail Broughton, who we obviously seen a little bit at Mounties, who came over, she was good. Charrington, a couple of their forwards were really, really good. Quinlan had a big game, and Samoa, no surprise there, but yeah, the Roosters just shell-shocked, really. Undefeated and then no grand final. Last year they come with a late run. Maybe Parramatta does that this year.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, yeah. I didn't see that game either. I was at all day yesterday, so
but
I didn't see it.
The flip side, back-to-back weeks they played each other, Knights-Dragons, it was a blowout. Newcastle, who ran for the spoon, I'm pretty sure, last year, dominant and no surprise with the purchases they made. Tamika Upton, the fullback from Brisbane, Millie Boyle, Caitlin Johnston, who was awesome for New South Wales this year. They were really, really dominant. And the young halfback that everyone's talking about, I'm pretty sure it's Hannah Southwell's sister, Jessie, only 17 playing in the halves. But, to the Dragons, Wheeler tried hard. Tonegata had a couple errors but busted the backside, but they were convincingly beaten. So was expecting Knights Roosters, but we've got Newcastle Para. So sure, Parramatta are stoked there in both grades, but I'd be leaning Newcastle's way in that one. But there you go. Coming into this week, NRLW, Knights, Eels, State Cup. We've got the Panthers versus the Devils and the NRL Panthers versus Parramatta. It is the Battle of the West. This show, obviously brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with NRL, make sure you do it with the True Blue Bookie. No win on the charity, unfortunately. We went with Sean Lane for one of the tries. He was obviously outstanding in the second half. He set one up and plenty of second phase and offloads, but no meat pie. In the second game, we took a hefty line on Penrith. They ended up covering 20 points, but not the 23.5 we're after.
Well, they should have covered it because the Stephen Crichton no try was a complete joke.
Well, that one, I thought the Luai one that passed.
The Luai one was a joke. The couple of the calls in that game were diabolical.
And mind you, though, a bit disappointed that when you get 15, 17 minutes, whatever they had, with 12 on the field,
Why would they care, though?
They would care, but I thought they would have popped them a few more times.
Please. They're looking at the grand final.
Unfortunately, no extra cash into the charity account for the Bears of Hope, but hopefully we can get something this week. And for the NRL Grand Final, back either the Panthers or the Eels head-to-head, and if they lead by six or more at halftime, Bluebet will pay you out as a winner up to $100 in winnings. Lead by six at halftime, you win. Terms and conditions apply. Gamble responsibly. Big thanks again to bluebet.com.au. In our power rankings brought to you by the Penrith Solar Centre, I went back and listened to see where we're at. You obviously remembered yours. Penrith and the Eels were your 1 and 2.
Yeah.
So you nailed that. I listened to mine. I had Panthers 1, Eels 3. So we were pretty close in terms of who we thought would get back to the Grand Final.
Who did you have 2?
I had the Sharks because I thought if they won week one, having the prelim would certainly be doing a good service. But I said if anyone could get back through, Parramatta would, and that's why I had them at 3. Didn't really have a lot of confidence, but they proved me wrong. So good on them. Well, pretty close on that one. Just remember, if you're looking for solar, there's no one better than Penrith Solar Centre. Visit the website today or call 1800 20 29 30 to talk to Jake and the crew there. Let's review these games. So Eels, 24-20 over the Cowboys. This one was crazy to me. In terms of lineups, Cowboys, no surprises, 1-17. The Eels, we'll wait to see what happened. Bailey Simonson did come in for Opacek. I thought he'd flip him and Waka Blake. He obviously stuck with Wonga on the wing. Bailey in the centres. I thought Bailey did a really good job, considering. And no surprises, they flipped Murata in and Madison back to the bench, and Cartwright replaced Makatoa. Only a short stint for him. Unfortunately, come up with an error, but limited minutes, really. They stuck with what you'd generally expect for them, which was a heavy rotation with the other two guys and playing big minutes with their middles. But the first half, honestly, I just really thought that nothing else could have gone worse in terms of their errors, how they were playing. You know, I thought the Cowboys signaled their intent from the first set. They rolled 70 metres. They shifted off the kickoff straight around the outside of them. They were a tad rattled. I think the only thing that was sort of keeping them afloat early on was the Cowboys gave away a couple of penalties to help them out of yardage. But their completion rate was horrendous. They kept dropping the football. They looked fairly rattled. But probably the biggest upside you can give after the half that they endured, where they conceded 50 tackles in their own half, 20 plus inside 20, is they only conceded twice, and I thought they saved a heap. And watching it on sort of a quick replay, it's not really in the character of Parramatta this year to go back-to-back and defend sets and scramble well and hold on. I thought they did that.
Yeah, but this is why the whole year we've been saying, let's just see what they do in September. I think they've been warming to these games. They've known these games were coming. The big challenge was getting that second bite of the cherry, which they, fortunately, I think for them, obtained with, you know, some late wins and some losses from Melbourne. And, yeah, the game on the weekend was... I don't know what to make of this game because I watched Parramatta Cowboys and then I watched South Penrith and I thought there was a fairly different, not only style of game, but just class of game. I really felt like the Penrith-South game was a higher quality than what Cowboys-Eels was, which, yeah, concerns me a little bit if I'm an Eels fan for this weekend. That's my gut feel. That was watching it. That was just through, you know, my eyes. That's what I saw. Parramatta, like you said, scrambled really, really well. They completed it, 50% in the first half?
Half-time, they were...
Really, if they're playing Penrith first
55,
half...
55, and then the second half, I don't think they made an error.
They would have been down by 18 at half-time at least.
They were 12 from 12 at one stage, and I think they dropped it. Mm. I think they got to the end high 70, so a huge turnaround.
Yeah, but I get that.
The Penrith or someone else probably
they need to be good across 80. Like, and then you look at Penrith South, and we're going to get to that, but the half of football that South had on Penrith, first half, and they went in at 12-all.
Yeah. Two completely, like you said, different things. So I think, yeah, for looking at them, probably the thing early on, when it just felt like for the start, Cowboys were punching them in the mouth, really front-loaded as we expected off those kicks, got stuck into them yardage, really trapped them. Those few get-out penalties hurt, and then obviously Annesley admitted, as much as what everyone thought, that Mitchell Moses scrambles on play, 5 throws a forward pass.
Yeah, it was clear as day.
You made, obviously, the point. They still had to make the tackle. They all sort of stopped, but how they didn't get called in a game like that, I know on replay, a lot of people going, what was it?
Yeah, but that doesn't make the call right.
No, that's like,
I don't want to, I'm not excusing
it's
the
not
pass.
It's not as bad, but that doesn't matter.
But you still should go in and fold in and make the tackle, yeah. But
also get the call right. To hear Graham Annesley go, yeah, well, it wasn't as bad. It's like, doesn't matter how bad it is. It's fucking
it could
forward.
Be a centimetre or, you know, 10 metres. It's still forward.
Again, where a try was the difference early on. We don't know how the game pans out because it happened early. But it's still 4 points or 6 points they shouldn't have got.
Of course.
So, Cowboys angry. But then again, a lot of people highlighting to the Cowboys who got the result against the Tigers early in the year. It's obviously not a finals game, but wins are wins and losses are losses. I think people are drawing a bit of a long bow there to go, well, you've forgotten about that. It's like, well...
Yeah, massive long bow.
Huge result. But that sort of, I think, neutralised things for the Eels a bit. They looked a bit flustered and a bit overwhelmed early on. But getting that sort of got them into the groove of things... you know, after that, they seemed to settle in a little bit more. Jason Taumalolo was just a heat-seeking missile for Isaiah Papali. I reckon he got about 3 head knocks off him. He got him once early. He ran over him a couple of more times. How he didn't go earlier for a HIA, despite the hit later on in the half, which has obviously led to the sin bin, was beyond me, because he was rattled much earlier than that. But it probably proves the point that we talk about all the time. When they get into these finals games, things sort of go out the window, or things get a bit looser in that regard, obviously. I think Cameron Murray's had multiple knocks across the finals and has probably only gone off once.
Yeah.
So, different games, different circumstances, higher stakes. Also, I have to say on that Taumalolo one, I know he had multiple charges, but I reckon if they got through, that he would have got a grade one. And they would have made sure he got to play.
Probably.
I think the fact that he's out and eliminated, that it was very easy for them to whack him with a grade two or whatever and hit him with 3 games.
We'll never know.
I don't think they would have hit him that hard, but...
We'll never know.
That was obviously a big turning point, but full credit to Parramatta. I thought they managed that period pretty well with the sin bin, to be honest. It obviously ended up leading to them, I think, conceding once during that period. They got back-to-back sets off that straight away. They got to that spot we were talking about in our preview, that half-back rower spot, and Chad Townsend just sort of panicked. They didn't really need him to come in, but he jumped in front of his back rower. Madison, who's obviously got the great hands, tips outside that space, and Regan Campbell-Gillard grabbed what would be the first of 2 tries and an outstanding performance for him. But 12-6 with the sin bin, you really felt like, okay, considering all they've been through, you know, they're right back in this. But full credit to the Cowboys again. They get an error not long after. Wonga Blake... obviously come up with one, or actually, no, I think I've got the wrong one here, but they just obviously flip things around. Leilua comes on and come up with a bit of a short side play there. Another bit of controversy. I know Moses claimed he was held. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought
he was held the play before.
I still think he
was.
It
was held and pushed over, and it should have been a penalty, but it shouldn't have been a penalty. The trial shouldn't have been disallowed because it happened the play before.
Mm.
So once the touches and the referee allowed that play the ball to happen, then it was, yeah, it was dead in the water. They still should have solved the play on the short side. But, yeah, he held him and pushed him over, which was illegal. But, solve the play.
Yeah, and that come again, like I said, they scored points, Parramatta, and shot themselves in the foot again. Reid Marnie throws a forward pass. They stopped Tuilagi, play 3. Then they've had another error, which obviously led to that try. But, you know, I also give some credit to Robson there, who showed open, jumped back down there and sort of sold that for the pass. But, you know, back end of the half there, they jagged the penalty goal to get things back to even before half time. But there was multiple instances on watching that in replay. Gutherson covered up a couple of times. Then I got to the outside on one. Bailey Simonson holds on. Like, Parramatta really probably should have copped at least another 2 or 3 tries in that first half. So considering all things heading to half time, what we just talked about with 55% completion rate, the errors, everything that sort of went against him, and then 50 tackles inside 50, 20 inside the 20 for the Cowboys, to be 12 all was outstanding.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, we go to the second half and it just completely flips. You look at things and go, first time they got a bit of a set for set for the game for the start, they kind of went back and forth and it felt like they were getting on top. And then there was that penalty for the hair pull after probably 8 minutes, which released the pressure. And straight after that, as Isaiah Papali feels it under the pump after they defend back-to-back sets, get a penalty goal to go 14-12, and then instantly they concede again. They shift early, play 1, get like 30 metres upfield. Gilbert, similar, those short tips to the middle, Neem and Dearden backs up, and off the back of it, they jump a short side where they didn't even really have numbers. They were man on, but they got Penasini sort of tight on the inside there, throw an ice ball and the out, drink water does. And Val Holmes, that pass was a cracker to sort of stop and prop and hit Tuilagi to go in, and hits the one from the sideline at 20-12, 8 ahead with about 25 to go, whatever it was. You sort of thought the fact they've gone bang, bang, Parramatta's still sort of in a bit of a daze. Everything's sort of going the Cowboys' way. You'd think you'd ride that wave home, but unfortunately, there was another turning point to come, and that was the pass out of yardage, where I think it might have been Drinkwater again, who sort of popped up on a short side play four, and the ball ends up in Sean Lane's hands, and from there, Parramatta sort of just went on a bit of a run. They terrorised them. Second phase was a big part again. Lane himself had an absolute blinder. Ended up popping three or four offloads. Madison come up with a couple. Campbell Gillard's reintroduction, he was huge again. And they just started to slowly kill him off his second phase and second efforts. I think they had 9 to 10 offloads in the second half, which really broke him down and took the petrol out of it. And to the Cowboys' credit, I thought they were really good in most instances. But the two things that will haunt you is looking at a front rower scoring twice so easily. And in particular, the second one, which was literally standing on the line. The A and B defenders are really tight. McLean is there, and the pass is just outside McLean. Tamalolo was a C defender. There was a huge gap. And Regan basically went in barely getting slapped, which hurt. It hurt big.
Yeah.
That moment there really, really surprised me.
They found a lot of things, a lot of holes just through short passes, pushing in short passes. So that was trying to get at that 3-4 man space, which we spoke about. And they did it in a different way. They didn't do it through a long pass to the half to a short pass to a back short rower.
Chains between
they
the
just
forwards.
Did little interchanges of passes through the middle of the field. I thought it was good coaching, well executed. They popped them on multiple occasions. They made line breaks probably on three or four occasions where they didn't score. Cool. Just through nice little interchanges of passes. I thought it was
Madison,
some really good play from Parramatta.
I thought Madison had a really underrated role in everything. I know Lane got a lot of plaudits and Campbell Gillard was outstanding as well, but I thought Madison was outstanding.
Mm.
He sort of really orchestrated a lot of that through there. Had three offloads of his own and carried really well, defended well. But obviously in the chain link passing, comes up with a decision for the Regan Campbell Gillard first one. Couple of the tips, some of the short interchanges where they sort of punched holes through him. Moses in the second half, after having a pretty ordinary first half, in particular where he kicked those two out in the full, he had his radar on big second half. When they were winning that possession and territory battle, he was just dropping those kicks on a dime inside 10 every single time.
Yeah,
they did a much better job in sort of slowing up the Cowboys there, who do a good job as we talk about getting out of yardage. But I think another big moment that come not so long after, they obviously find themselves just behind on the back of that. But I think it was it felt? They got a penalty. Moses misses. Murata comes up with an offload, similar deal again. Campbell Gowd, all the usual suspects, and it's that man Lane, again, who runs at Chad, who had a nightmare in the second half trying to deal with him. Throws a pass, Felt just misses the intercept. Sivo goes in 24-20. And then not long after that, after having to back up and defend a couple of sets after being under pressure, and then having it all released after they cycled well, got a dropout. And look, they're putting pressure on. The Cowboys come up with a huge play to get the short dropout through Hiku. They get a six again. There's a couple of saves of Parramatta scrambling. And then the huge play at the end of that was the shift play. It looks like Felt's going to make it to the corner. And Sivo just gets enough to put him out.
Mm.
So off the back of a good period there and feeling like the Cowboys were coming.
That's the Felt one where he actually stepped out before Sivo got there.
But took just enough to make sure that was probably going to go. That was with about 8 minutes to go. And then you finish off from there. They obviously end up closing out. They have to scramble multiple times. They have to back up, like I said, for a couple of repeat sets. They were 12 from 12. They completely flipped, like we said, what they were going to do. Townsend had a really smart play from dummy half where he got Madison, which got him a penalty and brought him down in yardage. Drinkwater cut inside, and I think Bailey Simonson got a bit of him, and Gutherson again covered up. Six again, they had three sets in a row. And then Chad, after coming up with a very smart play, had a bit of a brain fade. He saw space in behind because the line was up. He wanted to kick for Felt, but Lane again, huge play, knocks it down, and Dylan Brown gets the ball.
Yeah.
And they had one last chance in the last set. They had a six-tackle set, 3-1 outs. I thought this is going nowhere. They end up getting two coast-to-coast shifts and getting down there and having a crack at him, and unfortunately, then I spilled the football.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, they had their chances, Cowboys.
Yeah, I think in the end, when you got the 8-point lead and things are going good, I didn't expect that Sean Lane moment to be such a big turning point, but it ended up being one.
Mm.
And even when Moses misses that goal, they obviously score another easy front row try off the back of it, like we spoke about. And the Sean Lane one was just individual brilliance, but they found a lot of love, like you said, through the forwards, interchange passing, the pop 10 offloads in the second half there at the back end of the game where they had some gluts of possession with Moses' kicking game really turning. But their forward pack was incredible. Their middles again, their edges, even Papali with a few of those head knocks had a really good game. Gutherson, like we said, needed to be busy. Like Reed missed a lot of tackles, but he also made 58, was super busy. As a collective, it was a huge second half turnaround.
Yeah, it was.
But for the Cowboys, I guess, it's always hard when you lose. But to get where they have with the expectation they had on this year, probably the hard thing is there will be expectations now, but they're young. And I think off the top of my head, the only guy who's moving on is Tom Gilbert.
Mm.
They get Lukey back from injury, who's great. Lucci's going to be better for a full off season there for him. And all these, there's a lot of young guys there who played their first rip football, their first finals, they're going to be better for another preseason. You think they're going to be outstanding next year. But that one hurts because when they got 8 clear and you're sort of in control and you got your home final and you got your crowd there and things are really going your way. Parramatta obviously did a really good job to turn around, but reviewing those front row tries I think would kill them because they're two very easy solves. Chad jamming was just simple maths with 12 for Madison to tip that ball on. And then the second one, to have such a disconnect in that amount of space between your B and C on your line, they should have been much tighter.
Yeah, definitely.
So that really hurts. But, you know, full credit to Parramatta. 57% turned around to 75 plus, I think, second half. I don't think they made an error, like I said. Go from a handful of offloads to 8 or 9. Lane, Campbell, Gillard, Madison, huge. Their pack in general. Gutherson, a lot of clean-up work. Halves, like we said, Brown was a little bit quiet, but just kept feeding Lane, did his job, but Moses, king game second half. For the Cowboys, I thought Holmes had a lot of good moments. Hiku's yardage work was insane. Drinky was good. Reuben Cotter was outstanding.
His footwork really caused Parramatta's middle
of the Yeah, try. I mean, that try they conceded for him to score the first one was poor, but he was brilliant. I really think he should be going to the World Cup with the lack of middles we've got.
Mm.
Different sort of forward pack, obviously, this time around, but I'd have him there. Tamalolo, that sin bin hurt, but he was brilliant otherwise. And I think Nano and a couple other guys had pretty good contributions. Lucci off the bench, but in the end, season over, unfortunately, for them. And Parramatta are moving on, so they've done it the long way. They've responded, like we said, to a lot of criticism and probably...
Yeah, well, they also travelled up. They played away from home.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that were in the Cowboys' favour.
Yeah, and I think another wrap
probably... They're not going to have to overcome this week.
To Mitchell Moses, he lost his nan during the week. He had to make the decision to miss the birth of his first child. He watched that on FaceTime a few hours before kickoff.
Tough gig.
You know, a lot of emotion there.
And like, all these people saying, oh, he's a professional footballer. Well, yeah, okay, cool. So would you miss the birth of your child for your work? I would say in 99.9% of industries, there's no way that would happen.
No fucking way would I go to work to miss the birth of my child. There you go. But if I was a footballer, about to play
it's the ultimate sacrifice. His first child, and I think the bigger rap needs to go to his wife, who delivered. I'm sure she would have had support, family, friends there, but she didn't have a partner there.
No.
My wife said to me, just like that would have been significantly hard, like really, really difficult. So, yeah, for him to. He didn't play his best game, but he certainly had a positive influence on the outcome, I thought, particularly in the second half.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that he's overcome, and you'll probably find he'll play a really, really good game this week because he'll come home and be relaxed and...
Happy.
Yeah.
I'm sure, again, it's funny how the cycle of life is at times, isn't it? Like, he loses his grandma, who they said he was really close with, and we can attest that. We lost both our nans this year. We'll... super close with, but in the same token, you know, you lose a loved one and then a new life comes in, it's your own child. So,
yeah,
swell of emotions. He's also a guy that's been heavily criticised. He's finally got him to a grand final. Whether he wins or not is a different story.
Doesn't matter. But it's a team sport.
Exactly, but I'm saying he's there and it's a huge week. So I'm sure for him it'll be all positives this week and be able to enjoy all that and hopefully, like you said, play a good game and, you know, who knows?
I hope he kills it.
He might be the one
who a good game.
Finally gets to end this curse and all the, you know, talk around Parramatta Sevens and the club in general waiting 36 years for a premiership. You never know.
Yeah.
They've gone the hard way, so it's not that they're not battle hard and ready for it. But, yeah, for the Cowboys, we'll review their season after we talk about those games. But I guess, yeah, a lot of key points we brought up for both sides ended up being the case. But yeah, their forward pack stood tall. Campbell Gillard, again, I know I don't want to keep harping on it, but at the time, how the fuck he didn't play Origin, I don't know all the talk and all the bullshit around it, but Freddie Fittler just should have sorted out whatever that was. He should have been playing for us. And with the guys...
I was the heaviest on that. I couldn't believe that he wasn't playing.
Mate, I was with you the whole way. I couldn't believe he was there either.
It's not an argument about who said it.
Jacob Saifiti fucking played.
That's ridiculous.
That's more...
Absolutely ridiculous.
It was... Yeah, it was very obvious what should have happened, but he'll be one of the first ones in the World Cup squad.
We'd hope so.
Well, with what we're missing, I don't see how you couldn't. Like, it's he has to be going to the World Cup.
You would hope so.
Has to be. But we'll leave that one behind. In terms of health for these two teams, obviously the Cowboys is not such a factor, but Taumalolo, 3 weeks, he'll serve that during the World Cup. He said today that he doesn't agree that what something he did in the NRL should cost him games in the international arena, which obviously there's been a lot of cans of worms open after the Taylor May situation and different scenarios, but looks like he'll miss all the pool games. Health for them, I guess the only question this week is, do they stick with Cartwright? Like, he still didn't go with Brown. There's been a lot of talk about that. Makatoa's been mainly on the bench for him, but played limited minutes during the year. Didn't go with him. He was 18th. His son, I don't, anyone that talks about this week, he's going to stick with him. He stuck with him all year. He's going to do it again. But the question, I guess, the only one really is, if Opacek's healthy, does he play? Or do you stick with Simonsen?
No, I think Opacek plays.
There you go.
I think Opacek definitely plays.
So we'll move on to the second game, the Panthers-South game. Probably a little less complicated, but crack a crowd in for this one too. They had 50,000 at Acorn. I guess this one was just a bit of a slow burn for Penrith, and no surprise for South. They come full of emotion, revved up at the start, gave their absolute best. I didn't like the fact that Penrith started with Kenny again. I know, again,
well, yeah,
like we talked about, and they justified after. A lot of people said he did a good job. Defensively, he does a fine job, but in attack, he is not even fucking close to Arpi Korosau. He picks the ball up off the deck. He leaves dummy half. He got caught with it. He threw a couple absolute shockers. Things just don't flow as well. That even affects Yo. Yo is massively affected when he's there at dummy half compared to Arpi.
Of course it does.
Yeah. It's just a flowing effect. And again, I think it just proves the point again about how big a loss Arpi's going to be and the impact he made when he came on. But for South, naturally, Havili and Johnston were ruled out. Jed Cartwright came onto the bench and Richie Kenner come on for only his second game. But they did probably what you'd expect, being a little bit short and missing some guys. They started red hot. They loaded up. Their line speed was great. They got to Nathan early a few times. Cameron Murray was outstanding for the whole 80, but particularly early. They really moved the point of attack. They shifted to the ruck. His tip-ons, they punched their nose through a few times. And I thought early doors in particular, they did a really good job on the back three. Obviously, it's hard to pick when they've got their full back three, but particularly Dill and Toto early, they got stuck into, and Staines obviously isn't as physical or much to handle, but you know, Penrith, to their credit, defended a couple of back-to-back sets. Ilias come up with a nice kick and built some pressure, and he had a lot of time, and you know, early doors, they fired a shot, Latrell through that forward pass, and Kalama Tangi basically told him, like, fuck, mate, play short, like, they're going hard on the inside of their slide, and they're leaving spaces here, but that was probably the story of his night. A bit too pass happy, didn't get the physical sort of player that we wanted, and Laiota certainly let him know where he was when he whacked him on the flip side. But yeah, it just sort of felt that nothing was going to go their way. The first try was the no try for Tago. They had that bounce off the kick, and Luai, he did grab him, so that one was fair enough, but good ball. Not too long after that, you get Murray again with an outstanding play of the ball. Cook drifts across, and it's a knockdown that leads to Cody Walker, which, full credit to him, you got to be there to take advantage of that play. But yeah, there was multiple of those to come after that. They have a play one error, then Penrith stuff it up. Kenny has an ordinary pass and gets caught with a footy. They just sort of went through a couple little moments like that where they're shifting and the ball's hitting the ground and things aren't quite working out. And then South's again, set play, nice shift. Tass comes up with a really nice play. Staines jams in. He doesn't come up with the ball, the man, and a nice one offload there. Gets to 12-0, and it's at that exact point where the game changes. At 12-zip, looking clunky. Korosau's injected, and things just sort of flip from there. They obviously start surging a bit more through the middle. Yo gets more involved. Their middles certainly make a difference. And I thought Lenu as well off the bench really ramps up. They get an error off Milne, which led to the second no try. That one was a crock shit to me to come up with an obstruction in broken play when...
Yeah, it was horrible call.
Like, fuck, he threw a 20-metre lob pass with no one within 5 metres. Like, that's... It's not a set line. It's not the same deal. To go that deep into it and get anyone a technicality, I thought that was fucking horrendous. If I'm being, you know, completely intentional. South come up with a good challenge, and again, you're sort of looking at it going, nothing has gone their way. When's something going to go their way? But you know they're always going to be there. But again, Cook, forward pass, Nathan builds some pressure, gets some repeats. They get a dropout, which leads to the third no try, where, you know, that angle looks like Tago touches it forward, and you're just like, far out. But at the back end, things finally pay off. That bench, as we said, huge impact. Souths have another error. Lenu just outstanding. Comes up with a great carry off the back of that. Kikau has a run, gets three or four involved. Arpy rolls out, and he's got Selle with his back turn, and Luttrell, who they really exposed, caught the line. He turns him inside out before he slides over. With four left, Arpy comes up with that error, but then unfortunately off the shift play, no one else to blame but Campbell Graham, who drops it cold on a shift play. Toto did outstandingly well because he certainly didn't have the wheels, but essentially threw Cody Walker into the pathway of Cook Elias. They all tripped over one another. So to go into halftime and go, look, we've thrown the ball on the ground. Luai's kicked one for seven tackles, thrown one on the ground. Kenny's got caught with it, chucked one. Nathan hasn't really kicked that well. He's throwing a few on the ground. Like, we've had an absolute fucking barrier. We had three no tries, one that should have been a try, and we're 12 all. Like, Souths are fired.
Yeah, taking it every day of the week.
Yeah, Souths are fired, all their bullets. They're missing Burgess and a couple of middles. They've gone hard early. It was always going to come back to catch up with them, but those two on halftime really hurt. At that point there, I just thought, this is not going to be pretty.
Yeah,
I thought it would have got uglier than what it did, but, you know, it certainly wasn't much in event in the second half. Penrith come out, and again, straight away, they roll the full field. I thought Crichton had a chance to sort of pass first set, didn't, and then Nathan drops it, but it didn't take too long after that. Kickout's charge down, which is something he's become really, really good at, leads to Nathan doing the first of three times they expose Luttrell. Luttrell's midfield caught the line, dinks one through for Lenu, and surprise, surprise, Cam Murray. He was there to try and stop it, but to no avail. They start to ramp up the yardage game again as South start to get more tired and have to rely on those guys for huge minutes. Back-to-back sets, dropouts, they just really started to turn and twist the screws. And off the back of that, I think Edwards off the back of all that pressure and no points, had like a 40-metre kick return. They were starting to get a bit sloppy, and that cycle was just relentless. And we talked about it in the preview. They obviously like set starts, put the ball out, tap scrums, all that sort of thing. Penrith are just fucking relentless.
Well, they got that type of game in the first half, yeah, and didn't in the second half.
And as things, like we said, got further and further, they just grilled them. Luttrell's caught again in the middle of the field, play four. Nice little shift play. Luai spots it, rolls another one in for Tago. Just absolutely grilling them. They flip the field 100 metres on the back of that. Arrow's groin's busted. Like we said, Murray's already hurting. Totola's played big minutes since got injury, and they were talking about, you know, Luttrell coming in after the game now with a needle, but he wasn't playing physical. They obviously did a bit of a job on him. Ilias sort of come up with one little bit there where they got a little bit of pressure, but they turned it over. That handcuff penalty, flipped it again and just rolled upfield. And then Lenu, that moment where he just mowed through the middle of Nikarima, who was fresh on the field, and then Milne, who's just... He's got some stupid plays in. He's really taken advantage of the guy that was at the Roosters as a junior Kiwi centre winger. Obviously had to get a long way out of the mountain, had some indiscretions, finds his way in because he's certainly a talented footballer, but he's got to get the shit out of his game because it wasn't even close to a tackle.
Yeah.
It was a jumping, swinging arm. It was fucking dumb.
Agree, it wasn't good.
The incident after, I know a lot of people weren't happy about it. Like Lenu obviously wasn't very happy about what happened, but... Yeah, it was already sort of spelled after that period of dominance, but at 24-12 with a man sent off, it was done. They kick a penalty goal, they cycle through them again and get some repeats and get some pressure, don't come up with the points that we're talking about. There was the wrong call on that no try.
It wasn't good, man.
Just Stephen Crichton, but overall, for poor South, 12-0, they would have had some hope, but it all just sort of come tumbling apart. And I didn't sort of say it before, I probably should now, I thought both losing coaches spoke outstandingly well. I looked at Mitrio's press conference, was great, and I really loved the line. Like he said, as a competitor, like, you know, as a competitor, you really want to hate like who you're playing, but you got to have nothing but respect for Penrith and what they did. Like, he was bang on, and I also agree with his summation again about sort of running out of troops. I didn't think it was an excuse that they weren't the reason they didn't win, but they really were struggling coming into that game in terms of putting their best team on the field or being competitive. And they come out early, like we said, and tried to fight all their bullets, but it just shows the quality of Penrith. Penrith not only absorbed that, but reeled it in no time and didn't really have to get out of
third or fourth gear. I'd describe Penrith's performance as mature.
Yeah.
Very, very mature.
I totally agree with you. But for South, again, I think outstanding year considering what they've dealt with and the changeover. And in that game, Murray, again, just continues to impress me in terms of his leadership and the way he plays. He's come on leaps and bounds. They found some good players. Obviously, like we said, Tass did a good job. Thought he was pretty good the other night. Ilias, I thought, kicked pretty well considering. Nichols in his last role to Tola. Kalama Tungi again. I mean, Campbell Graham to play the last month or so with broken ribs. I know he had that error, but certainly didn't shirk the task, that's for sure.
No,
I think those forwards and probably, like I said, Ilias' kicking was, you know, sort of highlights that. I thought, if anything, they were sort of let down by their other key players. I wanted the trial to be more physical. It's come out after the fact they were saying he was needled. Again, I sort of thought just very pass-happy, led to a couple of errors, didn't really want to get involved in the thick of it all. Cook come up with a couple of key errors, and Cody, obviously, generally, you know, quite emotionally, jumped on that one try, but same deal. Got a bit flustered, so wasn't ideal, but season's done, unfortunately.
That's right.
South, 5 prelims and I was huge, but Demetrio for year one, that's awesome. And Penrith now, 3 grand finals in a row. The first one behind against Melbourne with half a crowd. They unfortunately lost. Then they had to go to Brisbane last year, win with a busted team. They're coming in here flying. Healthy, May will get until Wednesday or Thursday. They said they want to make a decision earlier. They don't want to drag it out during the week. So realistically, they're coming in very, very good shape.
Definitely.
And if they win 2 out of 3 straight grand finals with 3 minor premierships, is it? Or 2 minor premierships in a row? Like, that's a hell of a period.
2, I think.
For any team.
Yeah, it is.
It took 20 years or so to get back-to-back premiers again, the NRL era. If they can come up with that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Such a young side in particular, because it's, you know, there's not many veterans in this team. That would be probably an even bigger achievement, I think, for a side of this age.
Yeah.
So, huge opportunity. And like I said, full credit has to go to them. 32 players used this year, as many as anyone in the comp. Heaviest representation in Origin, internationals, and your best player, your halfback, played 14 games.
Yeah.
And you won 21 games during the year. It's fucking ridiculous. And then to win all those grades like we spoke about, it's a credit to the club. They're in a fantastic position.
Yeah.
Moving forward. And while they may not exactly be a premiership threat or you'll be a top 4 threat or you'll always be around there, to know what's coming through, it's just a matter of making the right decisions about who stays and who goes with the players you've got. You know, this should really, like, with no shits or giggles, and we've said this a million times, with the juniors you've got there, if you do the right thing, they should never not be in the top 8, but they should never not be sort of around the 4, in my opinion.
Mm.
If you do the right thing with your pathways.
Yeah.
Because no one else has more juniors and a better set, if it's handled right, which it has been in the more recent years. But if they keep this pipeline coming, success will come in leaps and bounds in all grades for a long time. And it should be that way permanently for Penrith. Because when the pathway's flowing, it's not always going to guarantee premierships, but you should be guaranteed finals football.
Mm.
They should never not be in the finals.
Mm. But you could make that argument and say that every club should be run that way.
Yeah, but they're not.
So everyone's looking for best practice. So the challenge is going to be, can you do it long term? Can you do it over a long period of time?
Exactly.
Because they've certainly nailed it in the short term.
That's the point.
Now it's going to be about sustainability and that surge and that hunger to get better and better and better every year. Whether people like it or not, dynasties, the best teams in sport who can maintain consistency of performance over a long period of time, have that same strive and hunger, irrespective of the result. The challenge for Penrith is going to be winning and still maintaining that level of hunger.
Yeah.
And that level of not so much professionalism, but just that will to be at that high level year after year after year after year. I think more from a recruitment perspective, retention perspective, admin perspective. Players come and go, but you know how you operate from an admin perspective, a recruitment perspective, salary cap perspective, pathways perspective. They're all the little things that give you the product, the final product, which is quality NRL players, which is what we're seeing at Penrith at the moment. The challenge is going to keep that conveyor belt and keep it churning over, and having the motivation and the will and the push and the drive and just all the work that has to go in to make that happen.
And like we said, they've obviously made...
Because I was there when it was shot. And, you know, when I left, it had turned completely around. You know, we'd won... At that point, we hadn't won an NRL competition, but we'd won New South Wales Cup and 20s and Mats and Ball, and the club was going okay in the juniors. But you're now seeing a lot of those guys through playing first grade, and, you know, they're going to go... Well, they're $1.35 favourites to win back-to-back premierships, so...
Well, my period sort of there was when it was all going off the rails, because our age group won Harold Matts dominantly, and then by the time we got to sort of a 20s age group, they had one of the biggest squads. They had no one signed, and more than half of them weren't locals, and all of us were like, what the fuck's going on? Blokes were going to Para and the Sharks and all over the joint, and it really got off the rails. But obviously after that few years where they built things back up and got on track, was it 2013 or 14, they won their first NYC, then 15, and then they were sort of always around the money, and now we've just seen it flow through all grades.
They won their first NYC a little bit earlier than that.
As it should be. And then, like you see again this year, like we said, they've won Ball, Flag, Cup, and it's just more important that, I guess, especially those Flag and Ball kids come through, because Cup, no offence, there's a couple of guys there that are veterans or some fringes, there's some good kids there. But particularly, you want to be converting from your SG and your Flag guys to make sure that those guys are up playing Cup within the next year or two and pushing for NRL spots.
Because
your eyes and hoofs and all that are very, very good to have in your squad. But what you're converting, much like the success they have now, I think there's 9 juniors in the NRL side this week.
Yeah.
And they had more, obviously, before the last 2 years where they've slowly had a couple of guys get signed or taken away. But if they're always pushing local juniors through it at a better price where you can hold them for a year or two before you really have to pay them, and be able to cherry pick every now and then, like a Coruscant or like someone like that in a need position, you're always going to be doing very well.
Yeah.
If you've got to go out like they did when they neglected it for a while and buy everybody, then you're going to struggle. But if you can produce internally to a point where, like we've seen this year, you have a kick out, walk in and say, I've been offered $900,000, and you're like, well, we've got A, B, C, D, E in the pathway right now that are already within 12 months, 18 months, 2 years at a fraction of the price, okay, you should go.
Yeah, but it offsets salary cap pressure.
Yeah. Knowing
that, but a lot of teams will do it for a mini cycle and then they'll get chewed because they'll have to go and overpay someone, and that's how they get their cap out of order. So that's my point, that you need to have long-term success, you need to make sure that you're churning out NRL players as quickly as you were when you had none.
Yeah, and you've got to prioritise.
Now when you've got them, the challenge is not to just be completely enamoured by the NRL, it's to be still doing the same amount of work with your...
Yeah.
Mats and Ball kids, because they don't just flow through.
No.
Even from Flag, you watch that Flag game and then watch an NRL game, difference is massive.
Defensively,
doesn't just mean that they're going to, just because they win a Flag comp or win a New South Wales Cup comp, that they're going to play NRL. That's not how it works.
No.
They need to be coached. So, and that's something that Penrith have done really, really well for the last decade. The challenge is going to be doing it year after year after year.
I think you've seen it again, and the reason why I think they win like that, half that team have already played Cup. So the fact they're Flaggers when they get through that, I think Penrith do a better job at trying to push that progression, not overdo it, but they're really trying to see early who's got the right stuff or who's...
Well, you look at New South Wales Cup now, isn't an old man's game. It's a young man's game.
The best and young players go straight to Cup.
Essentially, if you're good enough, if you're dominating in Flag or Ball, they put you in Cup.
Yeah.
So, to Phil Gould's credit, he did that very early on in his tenure at Penrith. I remember with that
unbelievable
20s team.
They put half of them up 2 years in a row.
Well, we got told, look, you know, we're not going to... try and win 20s, we're trying to win Cup. It was only the year that we won it, when Cup sort of fell away and it was pretty clear that they weren't going to win it, Gus actually said, we're gonna try and win 20s because we can't win Cup.
Well, they won
so
twice.
The priority was always to win the highest level of competition that you can and to have the players playing at the highest level of competition that they're all capable.
Yeah, but even
which was a credit
to this year. The Puru Twins, Mav, like a lot of those guys played 10-plus games of New South Wales Cup and then at the right time. Obviously,
that was a lot of that had to do with resting as well.
Yeah, I get that. But my point is they've also given them a taste already. So they're further along than your general 18-year-old. And their 18s kids going straight to flag and playing half a year in key positions and start. Like, they are very, very good at accelerating development and realising.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's been happening for 10 years.
When it's not working. And yeah, they're in a hell of a position. But wrapping that one up, like I said, I thought their bench was a real difference. Arpi and Lemieux were huge points of difference when they got on the field. Dylan Edwards was fucking incredible, as he always has been. He's just, that bloke just doesn't look tired. He never looks tired. Toto, I thought he had a...
I thought Edwards was the best player on the field by a mile.
Yeah, well, when I was listening to Fox and they said Nath was the man of the match, I was like, well, that surprised me because he had a few ordinary kicks early on and made a couple of mistakes. He was better in the second half. But
yeah, I don't think you need to compare. Dylan Edwards, to me, was the best player.
It was the old easy argument, though, about, the halfback. And what, well,
yeah,
fuck.
Great. Well, they're not watching the game.
It's the easiest way to pick it. But, yeah, he was better in the second half. Tito was outstanding as well. Fish and Laota did a good job. And Yo come to the fore a bit more. So, and Kikau, his intent was incredible. He was fucking just ironing blokes out.
Yeah.
He was really, really good. But for South, Murray led from the front, like I said, a lot of those other guys there. But... yeah, then we move on now. We've got first versus fourth, the repeat of the Battle of the West. It's going to be huge interest. I think the tickets have sold very fucking quickly on all releases so far.
Don't know if we've got ours, so we don't have to worry.
We're members. I know a few mates today that were para fans that missed out.
There you go.
So,
ouch. I think they go on sale general public tomorrow.
Well, I told all of them the other day when that first lot was still out. Well, the games were going, like, just buy. They were there. And a few of them waited and it went down to singles. So I think they've sold very easily.
Yeah, like last chance in the morning.
We saw it in 09 when Parramatta went on that run. Like, we were at a home game with your mate at the time and they played the Tigers. And I think they'd lost multiple games in a row. There was barely 5,000 people at Parramatta Stadium.
Yeah.
Come grand final day, there was 80 fucking thousand gold jerseys and there was a handful of purple ones. There's plenty of fans for both sides here.
Mm.
So I think it'll be a very, very good crowd. Hopefully a bit of a 50-50 split and hopefully a good game to reflect on that as well. But I'm really looking forward to it. We've obviously... Last year, we denied for the first time a grand final due to circumstances out of our control, but I couldn't think of a better reintroduction to a grand final after 2 years of COVID. Mm. The Storm Panthers one was sort of a bit of a non-event. I was very happy with the result, but half-time, that game was pretty much done, and it was half a crowd.
Mm.
This crowd should be very hostile, and I'm extremely excited for this weekend. I'm counting down the days. I really am. But moving on from those two, review of the seasons. For these two teams, if I can find my page. We'll start off with the Cowboys, who finished third in the regular season, fourth after being beaten on the weekend. Their over-under was 7.5. I had the over, you had the under. Players used, they were one of the better in that regard, considering their representation, because injury-wise, they were pretty well off. They only used 25 players, 17 wins, 7 losses, fourth in attack, second defensively, and their away record was 8-4. Which, as I said again, obviously a real
That's
key
huge,
point.
Yeah.
But led by Peyton after a tough year last year, there was questions around him and Tamalolo. There was questions around the purchases of Townsend, Hiku, what Holmes could do, you know, why they bought Dearden. But you look at it, every box that was ticked was a winner. Chad Townsend, as we talked about, turned out being the perfect buy for that team. Sort of pulled all of it together. They went to a lot of old school training, he said, and just hardened up and got fitter and worked on defense and got the reps in there, and that certainly paid off. Tamalolo was back to being his best. Holmes in his center position, I think, was close to the best center in the competition and showed that quality. Hiku was great, and then the overall growth in other players. Like, Drinkwater didn't start the season in there. Now he's got an extension and turned out to be a key piece of their spine. Robson went to another level, did, and was fucking outstanding. In his origin game, he was great. Cotter to move from hooker after the injuries he's had into the front row role and do what he did. You know, Tuolagi, Gilbert, McLean might have had his best years. And then you throw in the kids like Lukey, Nenai, and Griffin Neame at the back end. it was just positives all around for them from the year in terms of results, growth.
Well, just development. Squad. They all developed.
Yeah, development, leadership.
Well ahead of when we thought they would.
Yeah.
And played more than competent first grade on a consistent basis.
100%. That's why they found out
where they were.
So,
and could have easily won the prelim.
Of that projection, you're sitting there now going, not only did they play.
Well, the difference is now is that everyone's going to have a look at over the off-season. Yeah, right, expectation, and people are going to know what's coming.
The huge upside for them, though, I guess, is you're further ahead than what you think, and similar to a Penrith the other year, except they didn't get to a grand final. You're young. You've got everybody there. There's not much heading out the door. I think the only thing they haven't sorted out here is Jordan McLean, but I think if he thinks someone's going to pay him big money, he's probably sadly mistaken. I'd be staying right where he is and taking a bit of a haircut to be a part of that team. Other than that, the only person leaving is Gilbert. They've just won the flag comp for the second time in a row with 11 contracted kids. A handful of those just pushed in. They're in a great position for off contracts moving forward. Next year, there's a couple of guys that are off, but they've got, like I said, centres, halves, fullbacks, forwards, wingers. They've got a great group coming through, and the window well and truly is opening. So if we see a bit more in particular from Did and Robson and those sort of guys again, led by those.
Didn't they lose that young gun halfback?
Duffy might be going to the Dogs, but they've got as big a wraps on Tom Chester and Jake Burke, so they've got three of them. If Chad Townsend goes in a year or two, that they
doesn't mean that three of them are going to be first grade.
No, I'm not saying that, but it's so pretty.
Try and keep the one that you think is going to be.
Well, Tom Chester's the one they pushed up first, who was a half, and turned him into a fullback, so they're obviously keen on him.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying it's not a bad problem to have. I agree with that,
but look at how many they've let walk previously. That
but Dearden's also 20.
They've turned into international players that they've let go.
Mm. Well, Dearden's only 20, 21, so he's obviously not going anywhere. Oh, 100%. They're going to groom an heir for Chad. You know,
that's probably the one I look at and go, that's going to be the difference between them being an okay team, like a top eight team, and winning a comp.
Mm.
They need to nail whoever that half's going to be. If they can't win one with Chad in the next year or two, they're going to need to nail that position.
Mm. Hiku, you know, someone to replace him. Do they keep Hammer around? He wants to play fullback. I think he's off next year. I'd be happy with Drinkwater. I think he's got more strings to his bow.
Way better player, I think.
I think Hamiso for me is a centre or a winger. He's not a fullback. I don't think he's got.
I'd be grooming him to play on the wing.
So if he accepts that, if not, again, like I said, they've got guys pushing through in both those positions. So they've got natural cover for a lot. I think the only one they've probably got a question on right now is Robson's going to go to November 1 and hit the market and see what happens. That's probably the one position right now they don't have.
They need to keep him.
So, in terms of those guys coming through, I think the 9 was contracted. I didn't see enough of him. But Hooker is certainly a position that there's not a lot of guys coming through.
No.
So, I think that's one they'll definitely look to make sure they sort out.
There's a few good ones running around in New South Wales Cup.
But, yeah, it's very nice, like I said, to go have a brilliant year, have everyone play that well. Scary to think what Nani could be, as we said, going through COVID, playing basically no junior football to playing Origin, and he'll probably be picked for Australia if he doesn't declare for Samoa. To think where he's going to be again in another 12, 18 months once he's learned a bit more about first grade with his natural ability right now is fucking incredible. I think Lukey is outstanding too. That ACL obviously hurts.
Yeah, but we use those superlatives a lot, like incredible, outstanding. Well, yeah, okay. Let's just see
where they're at.
Let's see him back it up next year.
I'm excited.
A lot of those players, because they certainly overachieved this year and they had a really, really good season.
Mm.
So the challenge again now is going to be doing it consistently.
Mm. The other loss is Kane Bradley. They didn't use him. And Emre Pere's been there for a while. They didn't use him either. So, like we said, Lukey, Leilua will be better. Condon didn't get to play much after getting a few. And those other guys that we talked about, 11 pushing through, a lot of those guys played Cup at the back end of the year. They'll play more Cup now. So they're in a great position. Let's see what happens in terms of what's coming in. I don't actually think they gained anything, because realistically, with what they've pushed through and tying up some contracts, you don't really need to. The only one so far was one of the kids they upgraded. And Gilbert obviously was outstanding. Heads out the door. But with what they have there, again, they've got natural cover for that. So you're very interested to see them in 2023. And again, I guess similar deal, being healthy all year, see how they go if they get tested a bit with more rep games and any injuries, how that affects them. Because they certainly handle it very well.
Also,
this year,
if they're all going to the World Cup, get a short preseason.
They had a heavier toll than what people probably realise. Like, by the end of Origin, they had multiple guys in camp. They had almost 10 called in at one stage. Yeah. 6 or 7 played, so they handled that pretty well.
That's part of winning.
I know, but I'm just saying they handled it very well. The other question is locking in their coach. He's got 1 year left. There's talk he'll get a 3-year extension.
We're saying he's not going anywhere.
That needs to be sorted out. So you'd assume they'd get a 2 or 3 year extension done to keep building on what they're doing.
Yeah.
So if you're a Cowboys fan right now,
they're in a good spot.
You'd be very excited and hope that more guys push through and they make good decisions, and hopefully you see some growth again next year.
Yeah.
So moving on from them, South Sydney finished 7th in the regular season, 3rd after the finals, over under 14.5. We both went under. That was bang on. It was 14. They used 32 players as well. They had a pretty bad year with injuries. 14 wins, 10 losses, 6th in attack, 7th in defence. Their away record wasn't that great, 5-7, but like we said before, it was a hard start to the year. No Latrell, new halves pairing, you know, you had Sewer and that guard as well as Reynolds. They had to sort of fill some gaps in. Like Latrell missed 10 games. Cam Murray started the year injured and then had a surgery, then went to Origin. They had their middles sort of roll a little bit and start slow. They had 3 or 4 guys play centre. Between their outside back combinations, like, dear Lord, between centre and wing, Paulo, Milne, Kenner, Isaac Thompson played, Mansour played, Jed, Tash, it sort of took a bit of a rotation before things settled down. But when they got things right, once Ilias played some games with Cody and started to take a bit more control, and they obviously got Cook going a bit better and Latrell stabilising at the back, I thought a couple of those guys, especially Murray out of Origin, him and Kalai Matungi for me were the real sort of standout points. And then Burgess and Arrow really grew a leg at the back end of the year and carried sort of that back row. But
I thought it was Murray and Latrell at the back end of the year.
Big influence
Murray had. He started the ball play, run more. He played at a really, really nice tempo, good footwork. And then Latrell, when he flicks a switch, he's probably the best player in the game in terms of impact that he can have from play to play. Like, just within one play, he's the most brilliant and damaging athlete I think we've got in the game. I know we've got, you know, Tedesco and Edwards, and but they're guys that do it non-stop. Like, their motors are incredible.
Mm.
What Latrell can give you in short bursts is as good as anyone in the game. I think that's sort of the next step, I think, for Latrell is how do you have that same impact and increase your volume within a game? That's got to be...
Yeah.
And a lot of people were criticising him out of the weekend, just like they did post the Roosters game, the last game of the regular season. But when Souths get beat in the middle and you allow halves to kick into a corner, it doesn't matter which fullback it is.
No.
They're going to have a really, really hard time having an impact on the game. I could see some of the criticism in and around he didn't inject himself a lot throughout the game. I think a lot of that was because Penrith took a lot of juice out of him, just putting him in a corner and bashing him and
being physical. I still think he could do a better job in his clean-up work in the back, though.
Well, that's more to the point than my original point.
Yeah.
That takes capacity.
Mm.
You can't just do that. You can't just flick your fingers and do that. You need to be doing it all year. And I think, you know, he didn't have a consistent year in terms of week-to-week football.
No, so it needs a big off-season.
Big off-season. And then if he stays fit...
Mm.
My Lord.
Oh, it's incredible. Like I said, they generated...
Same as Cam Murray. Like, Cam Murray didn't have a very fluent season.
No, he had two surgeries.
Put his best football together at the back end of the year. Him and Latrell did. And there's no surprise that propelled him...
Yeah, well, I think, again, all...
Into the top four.
Tom's back end was huge. Arrow's back end was pretty impressive, I thought. He's been a bit underwhelming for me, but he... really lifted. I still thought
a lot of those guys are still inconsistent.
I thought, you know, Tass did a really good job. Havili, Selly, they got a lot out of those sort of guys to get where they got to.
You don't have Murray and Latrell, you don't get anywhere. I thought Ilias improved every week. His kicking game improved every week. He's still learning in first grade. But I thought there were some periods out of the weekend against Penrith where he really polished their sets off well in the first half. It's just going to be building that volume. You need to be able to do it for 80. And our elite halfbacks in the game can do it for 80, but it doesn't happen overnight. And, yeah, I think they're certainly on the right track with him. I think his defence has improved as well. And as his body develops and he yeah, probably puts a little bit more weight on over the preseason. He's going to develop into a really, really nice NRL halfback, I think.
Mm. Well, I think another big point for me at the end, they ran out of middles, but I thought they were short from the start.
Well, they were. We said that in our preview for the season.
You know, they sort of covered up the outside back thing. I thought Tash did a really good job. Campbell Graham, I thought, was outstanding. And the way he come on with his injuries.
Yeah, I don't see it. Campbell Graham, I can take him or leave him.
Well, I don't. I take him over a lot of centres.
I wouldn't. I don't have a great love for him. Not personally, just with his footy, it comes up with errors and...
Yeah, well, that's like me with people who love Johnson scoring tries, and I think he does nothing in yardage.
I think when you're talking about their middle, a lot of that could be offset by work rate from their outside backs.
They don't get enough out of other guys. Like, I think Johnston contributes zero on that one. I think Milne helps there, but Milne needs to clean up his discipline.
But Milne also isn't an OB. Like, he's not a traditional OB.
Well, he was. He'd come through as a junior Kiwi centre
winger. But he hasn't. Like, he's playing back row for most of the year in
only one year
Cup.
They moved in there. He's played all his career.
But it tells you what they think of him from an OB perspective. They thought he was going to be an OB in first grade. They'd be playing in there in Cup, and they weren't. Probably because they can identify that they need forwards.
Well, they're trying to fill those gaps. Back row.
Let's just see.
But
go and look at the team list. Like, he played against us in the back row. The 3 or 4 weeks before that, he was playing in the back row. That was the back end of this year.
Yeah, well, he's definitely physical enough, but I think he's definitely...
And then they go and play him in first grade. So I think Isaac Thompson's going to be the one that will fill that role, hopefully, as a physical yardage carry.
Mm. Well, they extended...
And a long-term OB for them.
They locked in Tass, Milne and Thompson all through 2024. So they're obviously happy with what they've got there at a discounted price, because, again, big thing for them was salary cap. They loaded up on a few of those guys.
Milne's is just discipline.
That's simple. Very simple. Discipline is his key issue. Mm. In terms of what they're going to lose, Paulo, I think, was linked to the Roosters. Mansour's off contract. That one's not a big loss. And I think, said this year, that a lot of guys they were keen on who they didn't end up calling up, I think they were happy they didn't have to call them in the end. But they've got a lot sort of pushing through, in particular in the outside backs. They've also got a very good young middle who, like, extended again. Talis Duncan, who they got from the Roosters, is a lock back row. He signed until 2024, and I think he might have even extended further. But, Josiah Carapani was a guy who can play center wing that they're really, really keen on. Terrell Callow is there. A lot of these guys are locked in, and they're moving into top squads.
I don't even think Talis Duncan was starting much for Nissa last cup.
I think he played half a year, but he's still only 19. But they've got big raps on him, obviously, and they've contracted him all the way through to 2025. So, they've got a good...
Big investment.
Good sort of group. And Ben Lovett was a guy who played a lot of cup at the back end, who's a back row. But I think for them, they need to hit the market. What's leaving? Nichols is leaving. Nicarima is only half a season, but they're short in the middle. As soon as Tom Burgess or someone gets injured, they're short there. I thought they overachieved with the middle they sort of had. And I don't really like Arrow playing in that edge sort of spot. I prefer him as a middle. Mm. So in terms of what they do there, you know, they looked like they wanted to use Host at the start of the year, but he was injured, but similar deal. You need somebody to probably come into your forward pack and provide a bit of value with the salary cap, with what they've got, whether they can find that on the market. There's a couple of big names who are off who can't find a club at the moment who are pretty cheap. I don't know what sort of room they have, but, you know, I don't know if they'd look at someone like a Tapao or that on the cheap coming off, you know, with not much interest to stay in Sydney and try and get him for a bit less to sort of add to their middle. Yep. He's been linked to a few clubs. Parramatta sniffed around. Newcastle sniffed around. There's a fair bit of interest. But, yeah, I think there's a handful of guys there. That's certainly an area that they need to address in terms of what is probably there on off contract. But, yeah, you look around. Between Kalama Tungi, Murray, Luttrell, Cody, Cook, Ilias's development, like they've certainly got some good players in their squad. But as we know, when you make decisions on salary cap with some of those guys, you sort of tie yourself up a little bit, and they filled in some holes, but need to see a bit of growth and push a few more of those kids through, I guess.
Yep.
But yeah, forwards, I think, is definitely a spot they need to find some value.
I think we said that last year though as well.
Yeah, well, I didn't think they'd make the grand final with that forward pack, but they did. And again,
made a prelim, and
Nichols has moved. They've got to a prelim, and Nichols is moving on, and they're pretty much in the same spot again. So they definitely need some guys to push him.
Yeah, like Nichols, he's not an exciting first grader, is he? But he just gets a job.
That's what I mean. Like, you sort of need to find a way to plug it. And looking at
that's more where I'm at with Campbell Graham. Like, I just yeah, I get it, but everyone's, oh, he's outstanding. I don't see it. I don't see the...
I'm more saying I thought he improved a lot.
The eliteness in that, you know, like I think they put him into the Origin camp. I couldn't believe that they put him into Origin camp.
But I'm looking at the off contracts here, like I said, about money-wise, you know.
But I think he's a better player than Tass. I think he's a better player than... He probably gives you a little bit more than Johnson does. He's not as good a finisher as Johnson. But you need to have balance in your outside backs as well. Like, who's giving you the yardage work? Who's doing your finishing? Who's, you know, you need to have some versatility and different strings to your bow across your back five.
Well, that's why I think, yeah.
Particularly when you've got Johnson and Latrell, who aren't really going to work out of yardage.
Well, Latrell has weeks where he wants to be physical and there's other weeks he's more finesse. But
we're talking about long-term and consistently, across the type of team you're going to be. With
Johnston,
it's your identity.
It's all well and good to be happy with the finishing, which is great. But, you know, a lot of that happens on the inside for him to crash over. But when you're struggling to get out of the backfield consistently and you're also lacking in your middle...
But I'm not going to go and move Johnston.
No, I'm not saying about moving Johnston, but you need a bit more. I think Campbell Graham...
So you need to get it from the other players.
I think Campbell Graham does try in yardage. I think Milne tries in yardage. Thompson certainly could help in that regard. But, yeah, Tass in that area, but that's the decision you make. But same deal being lighter on the forward pack. They're not really compensating in either area. They're a bit low on both sides of that.
Mm.
And that puts a lot of responsibility on guys like Murray and that to probably do more than what you want them to. Thanks, so. Cool. Yeah, looking at a couple of the names here, like I know Lodge is still not sold with the Roosters, but I highly doubt he's going to go there or they've got the money for him. But there's not a lot available. Most clubs have either cleaned up all their off contracts or they've got two or three are available. And again, they're the sort of blokes at the moment that are going to be getting training trials or second chances. So the real big one that stands out to me, as I said, is probably Martin Taupau and what they could potentially get him for. McLean at the Cowboys, like I said, I think he'll just end up staying there. Plus, he's had a pretty big year. He got put into the Origin camp. And the only other real name sort of standing out more for a depth perspective, he was at South previously. He played juniors there. Was Kazuski at the Dragons. I thought he was pretty good depth for them. I don't think they utilised him enough. I think South could do worse than pick up another veteran like that to put in your top 30.
He's a good player.
still not re-signed there, but again, he's not going to cost you. That's for sure.
He's very good in both games against us.
That's where you need to find value. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But obviously, with a heap of kids coming through on those development contracts and signed up long term, they need somebody else to push through. So there you go. Season reviews for both those teams. A quick finish up on some points. The Dally M Wednesday. What are you thinking? I think it's down to three players. Ben Hunt led at round 12, at 19. Hines was on 16. And Tedesco, I think, is a smoky here. He was on 14. But looking at the guys that are around him, Yo goes through a rest period. And Origin, Moses, I don't think would have polled as much.
Do you get points for Origin?
I think that was what changed the other year. I think they do get points for Origin.
I think Tedesco will get a few for Origin.
I think Hunt would have got man of the match in game three.
And then they won, what did they win? 7 in a row or something?
Yeah, and that's why I was looking at this. So I did a bit of quick maths. Hunt, they only won 5 games, but he would have polled majority on the back end. He was already leading. So if he polls man of the match in Origin and then 4 more games at 3, he would lean on about 33 points.
Right.
Hines, they won 11 of the last 12, and he was on 16. So I dare say he was man of the match at least 8 times. If he does that, that's 40 points. That's ridiculous. And then Teddy, like you said, 7, and then a couple of Origin games. He'd need to almost be man of the match in all of them, which I don't think he would have been. I think Manu would have stolen a few.
Sam Walker.
So I'm sort of sitting here thinking, by normal maths now, it seems like it's all in Hines' favour that they weren't affected by Origin. They won 11 of their last 12.
So Hines is going to win the Dally M.
If going off sort of what if you look, I think he was one of their better players in a lot of the games. Even if he's man of the match in 7 or 8 of those games out of 12, that takes him to almost 40 where he's at already. But, yeah.
Okay.
I sort of wondered before.
If he's the best player in the comp. He's the best player in the comp.
So a lot of people were wondering, like, Teddy be a snakey. I thought, I think, you know, their wins, he would have got a lot, but he has more guys taking points off him. I think Hines and Hunt have less guys sort of hampering their totals, but if you win 11 of your last 12, you think he would have polled a lot.
How many votes did Dylan Edwards poll?
Dylan Edwards was on 13 before they stopped.
Yeah.
Round 12, and I think he basically played every game, didn't he? I think they rested him once.
Yeah.
They still won a lot.
But so, again, they would have won a lot and then...
Other guys would have taken points off him. This is the thing. And this is the point I'm making.
I hate that about the system.
I think Cronulla's back end of the season and Nico being sort of their one or two every week probably leads to him cleaning up.
Appy or Dylan would win the Penrith Player of the Year, weren't they?
At the end Dylan
of
the Edwards year? Already won the Player of the Year.
For oh, he won it. Okay.
He won the Merv Cartwright medal.
Right.
I think a lot of those were already announced. I think Parramatta haven't done theirs yet, and maybe a couple other clubs.
What would you do it? What would you have your presentation before your season's over?
Oh, some do it week one and just have the prezo and book it in. So most of them are done.
That'd be weird, because what if you win the comp? You'd want to have the presentation after you win the comp, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess. Or you can have something else afterwards. Or is it
just because the players want to get out of there? I think
some of them just get it over and done with or book it in on a date and they see what happens. So whether you're out, like the Sharks waited until their season's over and had theirs. Nico Hines obviously won their players' player.
Yeah, as a player and a coach, I wouldn't like to be doing an end-of-season presentation when your season hasn't ended.
Anyway. But my maths could be wrong, but I just looked at the wins on the back end and thought, well...
Is there a market on the Dally M?
No, there's not. For some reason, there never really is. And I think some bookies do it on the night, but not many do. I think maybe because of how hard it is to guess, they stay away from it. But this year I sort of looked. The guys that were around...
Because you can bet on the Brownlow and all that, can't you?
Yeah, well...
Is that because the Brownlow's locked and I think you never see the points for the Brownlow? How they do the whole vote?
They do the whole vote. So Munster was on 12. They lose a lot of games and he was good against a few teams, but not enough.
No, he's not winning.
Moses and Yo, I don't think, would have polled enough. You know, Dill, I think, would have had points stolen. So it was Hunt, Hines and Teddy for me. And that lead and those two guys being dominant in their teams, I think, leads to them, one of those two winning it. But Hines, I think, has the best possible run, considering they won 11 games of the last 12. And he was only three behind at the time. So interested to see about that one. In the...
When's it on?
Wednesday night, I'm pretty sure. In the RLPA awards, he didn't make the team of the year.
He
was nominated for the player of the year.
But he's going to win the Dally M.
But he potentially win the Dally M.
Time to change the voting system.
In the players' RLPA awards, Tedesco was the fullback. Tupou and Sawali were the wingers. Olam and Manu were the centres. They had Munster and Ben Hunt in the halves. Fisher Harris and Tarpany were the front row. Arpy was the hooker. The back row was Isaiah Papali'i, Jeremiah Nenai, and Murray was the lock. And the five guys nominated for the Players Association Player of the Year, which is obviously voted on by the players, is Cam Munster, Ben Hunt, Nico Hines, Joseph Manu, and James Tedesco. So, yeah, he didn't get voted in his own position, but he's nominated for their players' player.
Interesting.
And for the women's game, the Roosters dominated that. McGregor, Isabel Kelly, Semi Bremner, and Kelly Joseph were all nominated, and Samoa Tofa was the lone player from another club from the year was nominated. And their Rookie of the Year was Gail Broughton, who was also at Mounties at Parramatta. So the other one I think people were talking about, which surprised me, they were talking about the Rookie of the Year for the NRL players. The fact that Nenai didn't qualify last year with enough games, I think he wins it hands down. Jeremiah Nenai. Yeah. Queensland and what he's done this year, you'd think he'd be in.
He didn't get enough ball on the weekend.
Sawali and a lot of other guys, I think Nenai is the easy pick for the rookie. But coach was one that everyone talked about, and there's different arguments. If you're going to go off expectations and where they're at, you know, I could see Peyton winning it, but Ivan Cleary, to do what he's done with the way they've managed their roster and their squad, minor premiership, grand final, third year.
Well, it's got to be one of those two. It can't be anyone else.
Oh, yeah, I thought similar. Like, great years by Fitzy and Demetra and all those other guys, but the two best scenarios, given where they're at for me, is Peyton and Cleary.
Yeah.
And I think realistically, again, that you can't save someone, oh, you had the best roster this time. To win 21 games, use 32 players, manage what they have.
He was in hospital, they had some operations. He hasn't had an easy year of them.
I think, again, you can't knock somebody just because they're
You wouldn't know who, like, you don't know, we don't know who the best coach is.
No.
Really?
But if we're going,
you just go on results.
If you were going purely off performance on situation, I think you'd give it to Todd Payton. If you're giving off...
If you're going on results, it goes Penrith. If you're going on performance above what is expectation, it's Cowboys.
Some mentioned after the day, I'm like, well, no, that's...
I think there's probably scope to have two awards. Because I feel as though they deserve the award for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm playing. It depends how you want to look at the... If you're looking at it overall, well, 21 wins, another minor premiership, another grand final, and what they've managed and used the most players, like, you know... But like you said, the expectation is they were the favourites. Yeah. You look at the other one who was talked about for the spoon, prelim, the amount of kids they use, their origin represents, like, it's huge. It's an outstanding year.
Yeah. Who's done more coaching?
Depends sort of how
you look at it. Probably Peyton.
But and a few other quick bits to finish off. because we talked about it during the week. Joe Tarpany locked in at the Raiders. They've got a 4-year extension, $850,000 a year.
Yeah, wow.
I think that's sort of the market for a front rower, like top of the market for sure.
Yeah.
So for someone like Payne Haas to be talking $1 million+, I think he needs to have a bit of reality check. If he's going on to 850,
someone's
going
to pay him that. Then
you need to stop. Joe Stimson, who got injured at the back end of the Bulldogs off contract, linked to your Titans.
Great.
And on the back of that, Corey Thompson retired a year early with 1 year to run. So he's left the Titans and finished up. So maybe a little bit of cap space there for them to use. An interesting one I found, if the Tigers could stuff anything else up. New Brown obviously came in and was outstanding at the back end of the year. They've lowballed him, and now the Bulldogs are very likely to get him. So they find a positive, and they let Jacob Little go, and they're potentially going to lose him after he was a real shining light for them. So
wow.
See if they can fix that situation at the Tigers, but it's not looking good at the moment after their first offer. So, yeah, don't know how that one's going to work.
Only in first grade.
The longest running fucking story of all you, which has killed me because it's played out on 360 every week. Braithen Astor reckons they're finally going to make a decision with Melbourne and Munster by the end of next week. They played golf, they met up, he's found the on away, they're going to make a decision. So the longest running saga for a contract that's not going to end for another 12 months, yeah, it might finally be over. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Tyrell Sloan, they were talking about him requesting a release. The Dragons said no.
Well, he did, didn't he?
Yep. Benny Hunt said as much, that he had to wait a couple of years. You hope he wants to stay, but I think the coach might be gone before Tyrell's gone, so that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. A few other little bits to finish off. The Tigers, in some positive news, Offa Hengawi took up his option and extended for 3 years. Brendan Tumuth was put into the top squad, young back rower, New South Wales representative.
How old's Offa Hengawi?
Offa Hengawi, I think he'd only be 27.
3 year extension.
Played a lot of first grade.
Oh, no, he did. They ran last.
He was their best player. And he won
player. This year he was, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. He was outstanding. That. I'd agree with that.
And he got their player of the year.
Mm. That's what you do. Wow.
Tumuth upgraded, Brendan Tumuth, good young back row.
Yeah.
Signed a 2 year deal. He joins first grade next year.
That says everything that's wrong with the Tigers to me. He gets a 2 year deal, offering Gary gets a 3 year deal.
Mm. And the Broncos did a bit of housekeeping after a lot of noise around them. Deloise Hoyta got a 2 year extension. They ended up snagging Jock Madden from the Tigers and from Penrith's grip for 2 years.
How's from Penrith's grip?
Jock Madden was going all but done to Penrith, they reckon.
Well, there you go. They reckon,
thought they had him and Hosking.
It was wrong.
They've got Hosking coming, but Jock Madden at the last minute went to Brisbane. So they've got him and Corey Oates. They were talking about a multi-year extension. He's extended for 1 year again. So I thought he might have gone to Wayne and the Dolphins, but he stayed at Brisbane for 1 more year.
There you go.
So there you go. Bit of signing news. Daddy. Bit of signing news. But that's everything. Run through those grand finals of all those lower grades. We've got our matchups for this week. We've reviewed the two finals clashes from the weekend. The seasons of the two teams eliminated. Left now is a huge weekend of rugby league. But the grand final, how good. Battle of the West come this Sunday. It's the Panthers up against the Eels. And the market as it stands for now with bluebet.com.au. The Penrith Panthers are heavy favourites, $1.36. The Eels are $3.15. The line, I think, started at 7.5. It's now at 8.5. So you get $1.95 minus 8.5 for the Panthers. You get a plus 8.5, $1.85 for Parramatta. So obviously some Parramatta fans nibbling at that one. 1-12, the Panthers are $2.95. 1-12, Parra up 4.15. 13+, $2.43. The Panthers, $8.40 for Parramatta. The over-under was at 37.5, is now 38.5. It's supposed to rain all week. I don't know what Sunday looks like, but again, it was supposed to rain a lot last week. It didn't really. And then I guess your try score is no surprise. To'o and Sivo are the two short favourites. We usually like back rows in big games. So looking at the odds there, Papa Lee, Martin, those sort of guys, they're fives any time, but looking at first try scorer, Kikau would be the favourite back row at $15.
There you go.
So he's sort of the one you're looking at there. And I guess our other market we generally like to look at is the Clive Churchill. No surprise that I'm sure that Nathan Cleary is going to be the heavy favourite in that one. I don't think there's a market here just yet for that. But, yeah, I think he'll be somewhere around the three and into the twos by kickoff, I'd say.
That's ridiculous.
I think
it's too short.
Yeah, well, most of them, I'm assuming someone will make an offer around that one, as it generally seems to be around the joint. But Yeah. What your thoughts on the market or the line? You think it's about right? 8.5 in their matchups. Parramatta won 2 during the year.
Yeah. The 7.5 line I would have taken. 8.5's a little bit different.
Yeah, I sort of thought
it swung the market. $1.85 swing. -7.5 Penrith. It was $1.85, $1.95 Penrith. And then now that it's gone up, it's flipped the other way. So the point, $1.95 Penrith, $1.85 Para. That point has actually flipped the market in terms of who's shorter. So yeah, I'd happily eat 8.5 Penrith at this point in time, but yeah, see what happens as the week goes on.
Mm. And like I said,
I don't have a really strong feeling, except that I just think the best two teams are there, and I think Penrith are just on another level if they play their best footy. So
Like you said, for both teams, Opacek, obviously, one that they'll look at. I don't think they'll change their bench. If they do, it'd be McIntyre again for Cartwright. I don't think he's going to change his stance on Brown. He wouldn't put him in now after not playing him at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he'll stick with his young bloke, no doubt about that. Taylor May, like I said, they want to make a decision early in the week. No surprise. I'm sure they just want to know, you know, if they're going to go with Staines or him. You'd assume. I thought Staines did his job last week.
He'll go with May. If May's fit, May
will play. Yeah, obviously. But I'm saying, if they're going to make a call early, they're not going to wait and hold out, they reckon. So, I think internally you think they have a pretty good idea of where he's at.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there we go. That wraps us up, big boy. But those odds brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the true blue bookie, and as has been across the whole finals. Panthers or Eels head-to-head. If they lead by 6 or more at halftime, Bluebet will pay you out as a winner up to $100. Lead by 6 at halftime, you win. Terms and conditions apply. Gamble responsibly. Looking forward, like I said, to the State Cup clash as well. I said it this week. I'm interested to see a market on that, hopefully later in the week. I think Penrith will be heavy favourites in that one.
Well, thanks, Scoop.
Thanks, Scoop. Come on, mate.
Bloody hell. Penrith will be favourites. Thanks.
Mm. Looking here. No, got nothing else. Any other stories, any recommendations, anything for the punters?
I've got nothing for you.
You got nothing for me?
No.
Oh, and the last things, I guess we finished off. Tamalolo, like I said, got the 3 weeks. Tane Milne got 6. Caught that.
Yeah.
He was up for 7 if he tries to fight it. So I think that rules him out of the World Cup altogether. He was going with Fiji. He'll probably miss...
Oh, Tane Milne, yeah.
Their 3 pool games, maybe a quarter. So he might be able to write 4 off before next year.
Maybe 5 if they'll have a warm-up game, surely.
So, yeah. And then others that were over the weekend, obviously Kikau. Just a fine. I think that's right. And Luai wasn't charged at all, which at the time, again, I didn't think much of it. He got put on report, but...
Who got charged? Luai
got charged. Got put on report for a high tackle during the game.
Okay.
I didn't think it was that bad, and they didn't end up charging him more for one.
I kind of remember it. Yeah.
So, it was a bit of an arm over the top when he came across to Campbell Graham. No result. So,
okay.
There you go. Charity account, like we said, $1,102.50. This is our last swing. Hopefully grab something for the Bears of Hope this week. Thanks to bluebet.com.au. Those final power rankings brought to you by the Penrith Solar Centre. And what are we going to do? We're going to come back on Thursday?
Yeah.
And do our in-depth preview? Yep. Break down the game?
Sounds good.
We're going to do fan questions, like we said, at some point? Or
yeah, we can do that.
Squeeze them in one night or that night or something?
Yep. Whatever you want to do.
Well, there you go. So for now, looks like we'll be back Thursday, but there you go. Breakdown of those games, season reviews, and a bit of rugby league news. We'll be back Thursday for an in-depth breakdown of the NRL Grand Final between the Panthers and the Eels, and we'll chuck in some fan questions. And then after that, obviously, we've got the big game on the weekend and the World Cup to follow that, which we'll have a little bit of a chat about on the back end, along with our review next week of the Grand Final and wrap-up of those last two teams, obviously featuring in the grand final. But for now, enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Bring it on. Give us more. Give us more. Where are you going? What's going on here? Is that it? Is that it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.